Hey everyone, I am Reva and just want to take a moment and thank you for listening to our studio podcast. Although we are here in Greenville, South Carolina, we are grateful for your support to see the message of Jesus go out all over the world. In case you are not aware, we have a YouTube channel, which you can find the link in our podcast bio. We hope you enjoy this week's talk and it encourages you and it helps you to be the human God designed you to be. So with that, let's get right to it.
All right, I got some dad stats for you. 100% of dads think they are funny. It's a true stat. 94% of dads believe they can fix anything with duct tape and WD-40. A study once showed that dads hold the TV remote 64% of the time during family watching hours. In my home growing up, my dad called the remote control the mantle. Like the mantle on Elijah, he would say, anybody want the mantle tonight? We're like, no, we're not touching that thing. The phrase, because I said so, is deployed by dads an average of 1,872 times before their child turns 18. And 87% of dads believe they are the cool parent. You know you're a dad when you turn off lights in empty rooms like at the personal crusade. You know you're a dad when you yell, I'm not paying to heat the whole neighborhood every time a door is left open. You know you're a dad when your playlist hasn't changed since high school. I was mowing the lawn yesterday. I had 90s playlist from high school. I was like, this is awesome. This is such good music. You know you're a dad when you mow the lawn and then you stand there and admire it like you just painted the Sistine Chapel. Every time I mow the lawn, I'm like, Candace, come look at this. Look at this. You did such a good job. I know. Look at those lines. Aren't they beautiful? And around the trees, perfect circles. I mean, just got it dialed. The other day, we had a gathering at our house, and some of the other men rolled up. They said, wow, did you mow your lawn? I said, I did. You like it? We had this little session of just admiring the lines. I want to take a moment to recognize dads in this room. So, dads, if you could stand up again. This is an aerobic Sunday. We're going up and down, up and down. Dads, come on. Give it up for the dad. Stay standing. Stay standing. I just want to take a moment and say, Dad, I see you. We all see you. We play an important role in society. In fact, we are integral and vital more than we may realize and more that culture is telling us currently. We are called to bring strength. We're called to bring stability. We're called to bring courage. We actually have a responsibility to shape the identity of people around us, whether they're our own children or people that we're friends with, and people that we come into contact with. We have a responsibility to shape and form identities in people. And culture is telling us we don't have a role. That's one of the tactics of the enemy, is to get us to not do what we are actually assigned to do. Bring strength, courage, and identity. And Dad, we know what it's like to wake up in the morning trying to figure out, how do I provide for my family? How do I provide for the people that I care and love the most? And that's one of the things that separates us or makes us unique, is that we wake up with this resolve. How do I provide not just finances and livelihood, but how do I provide love and care and value for the people that I give my life to, people that we've been entrusted with? And sometimes our identity can get wrapped up in that, but I just want to champion that thing inside each and every one of us as dads. Like, we wake up with that weight and that responsibility, but it's also one of the greatest privileges in life. For those of you, obviously the ones that are standing, you have children now, and it is hard to describe what it is like to provide for your family something. And some of you in this room are providing for your families now that your dad didn't even provide for you. So I just want to celebrate you that you're shifting cycles in your family line. You're breaking frameworks and patterns that weren't helpful for you, but you're starting something fresh and something new. So I just want to champion dads in this room that you're starting something that maybe you didn't even get to receive as a son. So dads, we see you. I just want to celebrate you. And we're also going to take a moment to find out who has the most kids out of all the dads. So if you have, obviously you have a child if you're standing, but if you have two or more kids, stay standing. Stay standing, Isaac. If you have three or more kids, stay standing. If you have four or more kids, stay standing. Okay, whoa, some bosses in the room today. If you have five or more kids, stay standing. Okay, if you have six or more kids, stay standing. Whoa, stay, stay. Do you have six? How many do you have? You have six? So how many do you have total? Whoa. Legend. You are a legend. Happy Father's Day. You can grab, unless you want to stay standing. I mean, I would let you stand the whole gathering. If you have nine kids, you can pretty much just come sit right here. It wouldn't bother me. So anyway, happy Father's Day to all the dads in the room. And I hope you have just a wonderful day planned ahead. I have a great day planned after church today. You want to know what I'm going to do? I'm going to watch the U.S. Open today. And we're going to eat really good food. And then after that, my wife got me a backyard called Bucket Golf. And it's basically a backyard version of golf where you set up these red bucket cones and you play golf with like plastic balls and plastic clubs. And my wife was so thoughtful. She bought that for me for Father's Day. And so we're going to watch golf all afternoon, eat good. She might not watch golf. Her and Kennedy will go in the other room and play with Winnie, our grand dog. Tab, that was for you. And then we're going to play bucket golf in the backyard. So anyway, that's what I have planned for today. And all right, let's get going here. That is not my talk today. All of that was just the preamble before this. There is a branch in the study of physics that focuses on celestial mechanics. And it's a study that's trying to understand how space works, how it functions. Now, we all know it's working really well. I mean, space, when we look out there, it's pretty miraculous and phenomenal. But celestial mechanics is a part of physics that wants to study and understand how it works, why it works, and what's making this thing go. And there's gravitational forces that affect planets, stars, and asteroids, and even spacecraft, as satellites and spacecraft are flying in space. And all these things are being affecting one another. And in this world, there's something called the three-body problem. Some of you might have watched the Netflix series that was, I think it was last year. But the three-body problem, the idea is there's three bodies, or planets and stars, three of them, and somehow they are working perfectly well, but we don't mathematically fully understand how it's even possible. Because any patterns that are found are disrupted. And so it's like this multi-layered mathematics, and they're still trying to solve the math behind what's called the three-body problem. The most common, most famous three-body problem that's currently being studied for many years is the sun, the earth, and the moon. And what makes it interesting is the sun pulls the earth and moon into gravitational orbit. The earth pulled on the moon and the sun, and then the moon pulled on the earth and the sun. So the three-body problem, if you've ever come across that, it currently hasn't been genuinely understood, mathematics has not quite solved it just yet. But before there was a three-body problem, there was something else called the two-body problem. And the two-body problem dealt with two parts, space, as far as stars or planets or asteroids. It was two bodies. And two-body problem was actually solved, I believe, in the 16, if not early 1700, by Sir Isaac Newton. He mathematically explained how it's possible that these two bodies are coordinating and working in beautiful harmony, mathematically figured out. In fact, his formula became one of the main foundations of classical physics that we study today. So you have this two-body problem, and the object, if they don't work properly together, they will drift apart, they will collide, or they will actually enter into a stable orbit or synchronized relationship. This breakthrough of two-body problem that Sir Isaac Newton figured out actually affects us today in real life applications, such as we're now able to predict planetary motion in space because of the formula of the two-body problem. It also helped us to design satellite orbits, how satellites orbit Earth amongst other places it orbits. This formula actually led to breakthrough to be able to mathematically figure that out. It also helped to plan our space mission, the various space missions that we've launched from this planet into space. That formula laid a foundation to understand how the two-body problem actually works. And interestingly, it also helps our GPS system to function the way they function, which how many know we would be pretty silly people without a GPS system on our phone because we rely on them so much. So thank you, Sir Isaac Newton, if you can hear me somehow. Thank you for that formula of the two-body problem. You see, in the beginning, God and humanity were in perfect relationship, perfect harmony. It was stuff of legends. When you read the early chapters of Genesis, you hear about the interaction between God and Adam and God and Adam and Eve. The level of intelligence, the level of interaction, the level of depth, the level of detail is remarkable. There was such a simplicity, and yet it was incredibly complex, but they were in perfect harmony. And as time progressed, sin came into the conversation, and sin disrupted that alignment, that harmony. And what sin did, it turned this beautiful dance into one of chaos and dysfunction. Sin destroyed what was meant to work together and to be in perfect unison. And since sin, before the cross, humans and God were just kind of this chaos, dysfunctional relationship, kind of finding its way through the expanse of time and human history. And you would find moments where God and humans would be close, and then you find other moments where they just repelled each other dramatically. And sin affected that reality. If you have your Bible, or you can just look on the screen, I want to read a passage to you. It's Matthew chapter 6, verses 9 through 13. This then is how you should pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. I want you to go back to verse 9. There are two words that changed everything in existence. And these two words are our Father. These two words essentially fixed and solved the two-body problem between God and humanity. What Jesus was introducing here was revolutionary. It was radical. It created such a shift theologically, philosophically across all of humanity in the past, present, and future when Jesus simply said, "Our Father." Now, we know when Jesus went to the cross and rose from the grave, it was the final period on the introduction of a brand new framework around our Father. What we sometimes don't understand is this was a very foreign concept in the relationship between humans and God up until that point. The idea that you could be in relationship with God on an intimate, personal level was not even on the drop-down menu of options if you believe there was a God. It wasn't like, how can I define my relationship with God? The options were distant, reverence, fear, awe, cosmic being. But the option to actually be in relationship with God was not even on the drop-down menu. In fact, if ChatGPT was alive then, existed in that day, you could type in, "Can I have a relationship with God?" ChatGPT wouldn't have an answer for you because there wasn't an option. So when Jesus says, "Our Father," he's introducing an entirely different framework that caused seismic shifts. In fact, Jewish rabbis never taught up until this point you can have a relationship with God. In fact, in Jewish culture, they would not say the word Yahweh because of so much reverence for that word. It was so sacred. It's so hard for us to understand this. But take yourself back in time and try to put yourself into the shoes of like you had so much fear and respect for Yahweh, you wouldn't even utter the word. Because that what it was, your relationship with God, it was separate. It was distant. Much reverence much fear, much respect, but you wouldn't even utter the word. So this is why they would say other words like Adonai, other names for God. They were just a little bit, a step down from the most sacred one of them all. It was Yahweh. So the idea of a Jewish rabbi, they'd never taught you that you could have a relationship with God as a father. So when Jesus stepped onto the scene, he just shattered not every box you can imagine, but he shatters this one, which changes the entire equation. There was a two-body problem for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Read from Genesis 3 all the way to the gospel, and you will read account after account after account of this incredible chaos and dysfunction between God and humanity. We had a two-body problem that was significant. And so when Jesus says, our Father, those two words changed everything. All of a sudden, he began to make it a reality. You can actually be in relationship with God in a personal way. Jesus used an Aramaic word called Abba, which essentially means God that loves you and one you can trust. What's interesting about this word, Abba, is that Jesus uses it, and he uses it numerous times throughout his life. And it's almost like he's doing the trailer, the teaser, the clue of what's to come and about to be made readily available to all of humanity. Paul even talks about it later on in his letters. He said, God has placed in you the desire to cry out as sons of adoption, Abba, Father. You have been adopted by God as sons and daughters. So Paul began to introduce this as well and expand it after Jesus rose from the grave. What I want you to understand is that when Jesus said our Father, this was a significant shift in just about every aspect of life. He was redefining the relationship between humanity and God. He was redefining the relationship between God and humanity. In fact, he didn't invent some new word. He took an existing word and he painted a picture of what a future relationship looks like with God by simply saying, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. He could have said, our God. He could have said, almighty creator. He could have said, the man. He could have said, the stud. I mean, he could have came up with all kinds of different words, but he chose this word, our Father, Abba, Father, because he was introducing something that would forever change the course of human history. You see, our Father fixed the two-body problem by introducing our Father. It collapsed the spiritual distance. It altered the trajectory of the future of humanity, and it reestablished a relational orbit between God and humans, as you'll find in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, and up until right before Adam and Eve sinned. Jesus didn't teach us just to pray in this passage. He redefined our trajectory. Our Father isn't just a phrase. It's a gravitational pull that pulls humanity out of orbit and into the heart in union with God. But what's amazing about this is a wonderful insight, but I now want to show you there are three things that happens when you embrace this idea of the Father. The first one, this what happens when God becomes your Father is he shapes and forms your identity. He shapes and forms your identity. Calling God our Father reminds us that we are his children, not his employees or his staff members or his servants. We are his children. When you acknowledge that he is your dad, Abba, Father, you now recognize you are his children and your identity is shaped and formed by that. We are sons and daughters, not orphans or outsiders. We're not on the outside trying to work our way in. We're actually on the inside. And to be honest with you, it's very, very difficult to get out of that. That's how complex and powerful grace and mercy is. God said, you are my son and daughter, and I'm never letting you go. Some of you need to hear this. Some of you need to hear this, that you've been trying to work your way in. You're already in. Some of you are trying to do the right things for at least a period of time, and maybe God will be pleased with you, and he'll let you in. And that's the opposite of what Abba Father actually means. Abba Father means you're my son, you're my daughter, I've adopted you, I've taken you outside of there, and I put you into my family. So we are his sons and daughters. We're not outsiders, and we're not orphaned. We are part of a family, not just individuals on some solo spiritual journey. We're actually part of something much bigger than our life, than ourselves. The next thing it does is we, not me. We, not me. This one I really want you to understand. Is Jesus didn't say my father. He said our father. He didn't say this is my God that I'm going to let you access. He said, no, this is our father. This is important because oftentimes we make our following God, our discipleship, a very solo, spiritual, private journey when it was never designed to be that way. It was actually designed to be done in a community, in a family context, that it's our dad. This God is my dad as much as it's your dad. It doesn't matter what background, what upbringing, what experiences, what you've done, not done. Guess what? He's as much my dad as he is yours. And I think for some of us, like, yeah, God really likes that person because they've just lived the life that would make a dad proud. And we have bought into this illusion, this lie, that God is not pleased with us. And today I want to debunk all that. He solved the two-body problem thousands of years ago by introducing our father. And today he's saying, you are my son just as much as you are my son. You are my daughter just as much as you are my daughter. We're not just invited into a personal relationship with God. We're adopted into a spiritual family with siblings. Now, siblings are awesome until they're not. How many have a sibling in your life? Or maybe a friend that's just like your sibling. And I have two daughters, and they drive each other crazy, but yet they're inseparable. They will die for each other. It's not even a question. They'll do anything for each other. So as much as you might not like the other people that follow Jesus in your life, guess what? They're your brothers and your sisters. The Bible actually talks about, hey, you're talking to a brother. You're talking to a sister. They may not go to your church, but the fact that they follow Jesus, guess what? That's your brother. That's your sister. And oftentimes we like to criticize those other brothers and sisters. At least they're not a part of studio. They're part of that other church. So it's easy to criticize them. Guess what? You're criticizing your own family. You're judging your own family. You're actually part of something much larger. And the more you focus on your personal journey, not recognizing it's our father and it's a spiritual family, you'll miss out on so much of what God has promised you at being your dad and your dad and your dad. It is good, isn't it, Melissa? The third thing it does, it heals. It heals. For many, the word father comes with pain, absence, or abuse. But Jesus invites us to reimagine what a true father is like. One that is present. One that is loving. One that is protective, just, forgiving, and never leaving. In all my years of doing what I do, one thing that I see happen over and over is however you have experienced a father, or fathers in your life, or men in your life, oftentimes shapes how you think God views you. Sometimes it's incredible, and honestly, oftentimes it's tragic. Because they've been shaped and formed, whether it's from a young age, or a horrible traumatic experience, or just a repetitive absence. I've seen more men and women struggle with God loving them simply because of their experience with fathers or men in their life. Many years ago, we were in Dubai. We used to go to Dubai a lot to do conferences and events. And the pastor there and I, we got in this deep conversation, shock. We got in this deep conversation. And he said, if you had one problem to solve in the world that you could solve right now, what would it be? And he said, homelessness. And I said, that's honestly a great one. I said, for me, it's fatherlessness. I think fatherlessness is actually one of the most significant issues in society today across all cultures. Is the fatherlessness. Not every problem in society can come from that, but you'd be amazed. I encourage you, do some research. Just ChatGPT or Google. What are the statistics of a fatherlessness generation? The statistics are sad. they're so daunting. It's like, how do we even address this? And I actually wholeheartedly believe the church has an opportunity to solve this two-body problem. Because when we come underneath our Father and we actually let Him love us and heal us through all of our own bad experiences, then we can extend that to a culture and a society that needs it more than ever. I know there's people in this room right now. There are single moms in this room. There's single moms in our community. There are families in this community that children do not have a healthy male father figure in their life. Let's start right here in studio. Find them and build relationship. Do something so they can have a different experience with male figures in their life. But it has to start somewhere. We may get overwhelmed by the sheer statistics of what's happening across society and culture. And it is overwhelming. I'm not going to lie to you. It is daunting and overwhelming when almost all crime, almost all dropouts of school, almost all homelessness, all these significant societal social issues can be traced back to the absence of a father in their life. But guess what? We can do something about that. You can do something about that. So I want to speak to the men in this room. You might ask, I don't feel like I'm healthy enough. Guess what? As long as you're moving towards health and wholeness, that's the goal. How much longer do I give myself to becoming a better man? As long as you're breathing air. If you think it's some destination, guess what? You're missing the whole point. We live in a broken world, a broken culture, broken society, and we come from broken situations. Guess what? We have to be continually intentional about being shaped and formed by our Father for the remainder of our life so we can be a people that actually demonstrates what fathers look like in today's culture. And if you haven't noticed, in the last handful of years, one of the most attacked groups of people is men in our society. Not the only, that's clear. But the role of masculinity, healthy men in our society is one of the things that every angle possible is being attacked. And what I don't want to see is I don't want to see you and I as men retreat. We can't retreat. We become healthy and whole, and that alone begins to shift atmospheres. This all comes from two words that changed everything: our Father. I want to read you a statement before we wrap this up. On the last slide, our Father is not just a phrase. It reorients us. It collapses the distance between God and us. It's the declaration of identity, a healing of brokenness, and a doorway into deep relational faith. Why don't you stand?
Thanks for listening to today's talk. If you're interested in learning more about Studio here in Greenville, you can go check out our website, studiogreenville.com, and you can give us a follow on Instagram. Our handle is studio.greenville. Have a great week.